Intelligent isn't about replacing our own intelligence with something else. It's about bringing into our lives and work more intelligence. Intelligence of a different kind. In many fields, but especially in creative ones, AI will be used by humans as a tool to augment their own capabilities. More augmented intelligence than artificial intelligence. A large part of artistic creation consists of simple pattern recognition and technical skill. And that's precisely the part of the process that many find less attractive or even dispensable. That's where AI comes in. Our perceptual modalities, our language, and our artwork all have statistical structure. Learning this structure is what deep learning algorithms excel at. Machine learning models can learn the statistical latent space of images, music, and stories, and they can then sample from this space, creating new artworks with characteristics similar to those the model has seen in its training data. Naturally, such sampling is hardly an act of artistic creation in itself. It's a mere mathematical operation. The algorithm has no grounding in human life, human emotions, or our experience of the world. Instead, it learns from an experience that has little in common with ours. It's only our interpretation as human spectators that will give meaning to what the model generates. But in the hands of a skilled artist, algorithmic generation can be steered to become meaningful and beautiful. Latent space sampling can become a brush that empowers the artist, augments our creative affordances, and expands the space of what we can imagine. What's more, it can make artistic creation more accessible by eliminating the need for technical skill and practice, setting up a new medium of pure expression, factoring art apart from craft. Yanis Xenakis, a visionary pioneer of electronic and algorithmic music, beautifully expressed this same idea in the 1960s, in the context of the application of automation technology to music composition. Footnote: Yanis Xenakis, Musique formelle, Nouveaux principes formels de composition musicale, special issue of La Revue Musicale. Freed from tedious calculations, the composer is able to devote himself to the general problems that the new musical form poses and to explore the nooks and crannies of this form while modifying the values of the input data. For example, he may test all instrumental combinations from soloists to chamber orchestras to large orchestras. With the aid of electronic computers, the composer becomes a sort of pilot. He presses the buttons, introduces coordinates, and supervises the controls of a cosmic vessel sailing in the space of sound, across sonic constellations and galaxies that he could formerly glimpse only as a distant dream. In this chapter, we'll explore from various angles the potential of deep learning to augment artistic creation. We'll review sequence data generation, which can be used to generate text or music, deep dream, and image generation using both variational autoencoders and generative adversarial networks. We'll get your computer to dream up content never seen before. And maybe we'll get you to dream, too, about the fantastic possibilities that lie at the intersection of technology and art. Let's get started. Section 8.1. Text Generation with LSTM. In this section, we'll explore how recurrent neural networks can be used to generate sequence data. We'll use text generation as an example, but the exact same techniques can be generalized to any kind of sequence data. You could apply it to sequences of musical notes in order to generate new music, to time series of brushstroke data, for example recorded while an artist paints on an iPad, to generate paintings stroke by stroke, and so on. Sequence data generation is in no way limited to artistic content generation. It has been successfully applied to speech synthesis and to dialogue generation for chatbots. The smart reply feature that Google released in 2016, capable of automatically generating a selection of quick replies to emails or text messages, is powered by similar techniques. Section 8.1.1. A brief history of generative recurrent networks. In late 2014, few people had ever seen the initials LSTM, even in the machine learning community. Successful applications of sequence data generation with recurrent networks only began to appear in the mainstream in 2016. But these techniques have a fairly long history, starting with the development of the LSTM algorithm in 1997. This new algorithm was used early on to generate text character by character. Footnote: Sepp Hochreiter and Jürgen Schmidhuber, Long Short-Term Memory, Neural Computation. In 2002, Douglas Eck, then at Schmidhuber's lab in Switzerland, applied LSTM to music generation for the first time with promising results. Eck is now a researcher at Google Brain, and in 2016, he started a new research group there called Magenta, focused on applying modern deep learning techniques to produce engaging music. Sometimes good ideas take 15 years to get started. In the late 2000s and early 2010s, Alex Graves did important pioneering work on using recurrent networks for sequence data generation. In particular, his 2013 work on applying recurrent mixture density networks to generate human-like handwriting using time series of pen positions is seen by some as a turning point. This specific application of neural networks at that specific moment in time captured for me the notion of machines that dream, and was a significant inspiration around the time I started developing Keras. Graves left a similar, commented-out remark hidden in a 2013 LaTeX file uploaded to the preprint server ArcSive. Generating sequential data is the closest computers get to dreaming. Several years later, we take a lot of these developments for granted, but at the time, it was difficult to watch Graves' demonstrations and not walk away awe-inspired by the possibilities. Footnote: Alex Graves, Generating Sequences with Recurrent Neural Networks, ArcSive 2013, at this URL. Since then, recurrent neural networks have been successfully used for music generation, dialogue generation, image generation, speech synthesis, and molecule design. They were even used to produce a movie script that was then cast with live actors. Section 8.1.2. How do you generate sequence data? The universal way to generate sequence data in deep learning is to train a network, usually an RNN or a ConvNet, to predict the next token or next few tokens in a sequence, using the previous tokens as input. For instance, given the input, the cat is on the ma, the network is trained to predict the target T, the next character. As usual, when working with text data, tokens are typically words or characters, and any network that can model the probability of the next token given the previous ones is called a language model. A language model captures the latent space of language, its statistical structure. Once you have such a trained language model, you can sample from it, generate new sequences. You feed it an initial string of text, called conditioning data, ask it to generate the next character or the next word. You can even generate several tokens at once, add the generated output back to the input data, and repeat the process many times. See figure 8.1. This loop allows you to generate sequences of arbitrary length that reflect the structure of the data on which the model was trained. Sequences that look almost like human-written sentences. In the example we present in this section, you'll take an LSTM layer, feed it strings of n characters extracted from a text corpus, and train it to predict character n plus 1. The output of the model will be a softmax over all possible characters, a probability distribution for the next character. This LSTM is called a character-level neural language model. Section 8.1.3. The importance of the sampling strategy. When generating text, the way you choose the next character is crucially important. A naive approach is greedy sampling, consisting of always choosing the most likely next character. But such an approach results in repetitive, predictable strings that don't look like coherent language. A more interesting approach makes slightly more surprising choices. It introduces randomness in the sampling process by sampling from the probability distribution for the next character. This is called stochastic sampling. Recall that stochasticity is what we call randomness in this field. In such a setup, if E has a probability of 0.3 of being the next character, according to the model, you will choose it 30% of the time. Note that greedy sampling can also be cast as sampling from a probability distribution, one where a certain character has probability 1 and all others have probability 0. Sampling probabilistically from the softmax output of the model is neat. It allows even unlikely characters to be sampled some of the time, generating more interesting-looking sentences, and sometimes showing creativity by coming up with new, realistic-sounding words that didn't occur in the training data. But there's one issue with this strategy. It doesn't offer a way to control the amount of randomness in the sampling process. Why would you want more or less randomness? Consider an extreme case, pure random sampling, where you draw the next character from a uniform probability distribution and every character is equally likely. This scheme has maximum randomness. In other words, this probability distribution has maximum entropy. Naturally, it won't produce anything interesting. At the other extreme, greedy sampling doesn't produce anything interesting either and has no randomness. The corresponding probability distribution has minimum entropy. Sampling from the real probability distribution, the distribution that is output by the model's softmax function, constitutes an intermediate point between these two extremes. But there are many other intermediate points of higher or lower entropy that you may want to explore. Less entropy will give the generated sequences a more predictable structure, and thus they will potentially be more realistic looking, whereas more entropy will result in more surprising and creative sequences. When sampling from generative models, it's always good to explore different amounts of randomness in the generation process. Because we, humans, are the ultimate judges of how interesting the generated data is, interestingness is highly subjective, and there's no telling in advance where the point of optimal entropy lies. In order to control the amount of stochasticity in the sampling process, we'll introduce a parameter called the softmax temperature that characterizes the entropy of the probability distribution used for sampling. It characterizes how surprising or predictable the choice of the next character will be. Given a temperature value, a new probability distribution is computed from the original one, the softmax output of the model, by reweighing it in the following way. Higher temperatures result in sampling distributions of higher entropy that will generate more surprising and unstructured generated data, whereas a lower temperature will result in less randomness and much more predictable generated data. See Figure 8.2. Section 8.1.4. Implementing character-level LSTM text generation. Let's put these ideas into practice in a Keras implementation. The first thing you need is a lot of text data that you can use to learn a language model. You can use any sufficiently large text file or set of text files, Wikipedia, The Lord of the Rings, and so on. In this example, you use some of the writings of Nietzsche, the late 19th century German philosopher, translated into English. The language model you'll learn will thus be specifically a model of Nietzsche's writing style and topics of choice, rather than a more generic model of the English language. Preparing the data. Let's start by downloading the corpus and converting it to lowercase. Next, you'll extract partially overlapping sequences of length maxlen, one-hot encode them, and pack them in a 3D NumPy array X of shape sequences by maxlen by unique underscore characters. Simultaneously, you'll prepare an array Y containing the corresponding targets, the one-hot encoded characters that come after each extracted sequence. Building the network. This network is a single LSTM layer followed by a dense classifier and softmax over all possible characters. But note that recurrent neural networks aren't the only way to do sequence data generation. 1D convnets also have proven extremely successful at this task in recent times. Because your targets are one-hot encoded, you'll use categorical_cross-entropy as the loss to train the model. Training the language model and sampling from it. Given a trained model and a seed text snippet, you can generate new text by doing the following repeatedly. Draw from the model a probability distribution for the next character given the generated text available so far. Reweigh the distribution to a certain temperature. Sample the next character at random according to the reweighed distribution. Add the new character at the end of the available text. This is the code you use to reweigh the original probability distribution coming out of the model and draw a character index from it, the sampling function. Finally, the following loop repeatedly trains and generates text. You begin generating text using a range of different temperatures after each epoch. This allows you to see how the generated text evolves as the model begins to converge, as well as the impact of temperature in the sampling strategy. Here we use the random seed text, new faculty, and the jubilation reached its climax when Kant. Here's what you get at epoch 20, long before the model has fully converged, with temperature equal 0.2. Here's the result with temperature equals 0.5. And here's what you get with temperature equals 1. At epoch 60, the model has mostly converged, and the text starts to look significantly more coherent. Here's the result with temperature equals 0.2. Here's temperature equals 0.5. And here's temperature equals 1.0. As you can see, a low temperature value results in extremely repetitive and predictable text, but local structure is highly realistic. In particular, all words, a word being a local pattern of characters, are real English words. With higher temperatures, the generated text becomes more interesting, surprising, and even creative. It sometimes invents completely new words that sound somewhat plausible, such as eterned and troveration. With a high temperature, the local structure starts to break down, and most words look like semi-random strings of characters. Without a doubt, 0.5 is the most interesting temperature for the text generation in this specific setup. Always experiment with multiple sampling strategies. A clever balance between learned structure and randomness is what makes generation interesting. Note that by training a bigger model, longer, on more data, you can achieve generated samples that look much more coherent and realistic than this one. But of course, don't expect to ever generate any meaningful text, other than by random chance. All you're doing is sampling data from a statistical model of which characters come after which characters. Language is a communication channel, and there's a distinction between what communications are about and the statistical structure of the messages in which communications are encoded. To evidence this distinction, here's a thought experiment. What if human language did a better job of compressing communications, much like computers do with most digital communications? Language would be no less meaningful, but it would lack any intrinsic statistical structure, thus making it impossible to learn a language model as you just did. Section 8.1.5. Wrapping up. You can generate discrete sequence data by training a model to predict the next token or tokens given previous tokens. In the case of text, such a model is called a language model. It can be based on either words or characters. Sampling the next token requires balance between adhering to what the model judges likely and introducing randomness. One way to handle this is the notion of softmax temperature. Always experiment with different temperatures to find the right one. Section 8.2. Deep Dream. Deep Dream is an artistic image modification technique that uses the representations learned by convolutional neural networks. It was first released by Google in the summer of 2015 as an implementation written using the CAFE Deep Learning Library. This was several months before the first public release of TensorFlow. It quickly became an internet sensation thanks to the trippy pictures it could generate. See, for example, figure 8.3. Full of algorithmic, paroidal artifacts, bird feathers, and dog eyes. a byproduct of the fact that the Deep Dream ConvNet was trained on ImageNet, where dog breeds and bird species are vastly overrepresented. Footnote: Alexander Mordvintsev, Christopher Ola, and Mike Tyker, Deep Dream, a code example for visualizing neural networks. Google Research Blog, July 1, 2015, at this URL. The Deep Dream algorithm is almost identical to the ConvNet filter visualization technique introduced in Chapter 5, consisting of running a ConvNet in reverse, doing gradient ascent on the input to the ConvNet in order to maximize the activation of a specific filter in an upper layer of the ConvNet. Deep Dream uses this same idea with a few simple differences. With Deep Dream, you try to maximize the activation of entire layers rather than that of a specific filter, thus mixing together visualizations of large numbers of features at once. You start not from blank, slightly noisy input, but rather from an existing image. Thus the resulting effects latch on to pre-existing visual patterns, distorting elements of the image in a somewhat artistic fashion. The input images are processed at different scales, called octaves, which improves the quality of the visualizations. Let's make some deep dreams. Section 8.2.1. Implementing Deep Dream in Keras. You'll start from a ConvNet pre-trained on ImageNet. In Keras, many such ConvNets are available: VGG16, VGG19, Exception, ResNet 50, and so on. You can implement Deep Dream with any of them, but your ConvNet of choice will naturally affect your visualizations because different ConvNet architectures result in different learned features. The ConvNet used in the original Deep Dream release was an Inception model, and in practice, Inception is known to produce nice-looking deep dreams. So you'll use the Inception V3 model that comes with Keras. Next, you'll compute the loss, the quantity you'll seek to maximize during the gradient ascent process. In Chapter 5, for filter visualization, you tried to maximize the value of a specific filter in a specific layer. Here, you'll simultaneously maximize the activation of all filters in a number of layers. Specifically, you'll maximize a weighed sum of the L2 norm of the activations of a set of high-level layers. The exact set of layers you choose, as well as their contribution to the final loss, has a major influence on the visuals you'll be able to produce. So you want to make these parameters easily configurable. Lower layers result in geometric patterns, whereas higher layers result in visuals in which you can recognize some classes from ImageNet, for example birds or dogs. You'll start from a somewhat arbitrary configuration involving four layers, but you'll definitely want to explore many different configurations later. Now, let's define a tensor that contains the loss, the weighed sum of the L2 norm of the activations of the layers in listing 8.9. Next, you can set up the gradient ascent process. Finally, the actual Deep Dream algorithm. First, you define a list of scales, also called octaves, at which to process the images. Each successive scale is larger than the previous one by a factor of 1.4. It's 40% larger. You start by processing a small image and then increasingly scale it up. See figure 8.4. For each successive scale, from the smallest to the largest, you run gradient ascent to maximize the loss you previously defined at that scale. After each gradient ascent run, you upscale the resulting image by 40%. To avoid losing a lot of image detail after each successive scale-up, resulting in increasingly blurry or pixelated images, you can use a simple trick. After each scale-up, you'll re-inject the loss details back into the image, which is possible because you know what the original image should look like at the larger scale. Given a small image, size S, and a large image, size L, you can compute the difference between the original image resized to size L and the original resized to size S. This difference quantifies the details lost when going from S to L. Note that this code uses the following straightforward auxiliary NumPy functions, which all do as their names suggest. they require that you have SciPy installed. Note, because the original Inception V3 network was trained to recognize concepts in images of size 299 by 299, and given that the process involves scaling the images down by a reasonable factor, the Deep Dream implementation produces much better results on images that are somewhere between 300 by 300 and 400 by 400. Regardless, you can run the same code on images of any size and any ratio. Starting from a photograph taken in the small hills between San Francisco Bay and the Google campus, we obtained the Deep Dream shown in figure 8.5. We strongly suggest that you explore what you can do by adjusting which layers you use in your loss. Layers that are lower in the network contain more local, less abstract representations and lead to dream patterns that look more geometric. Layers that are higher up lead to more recognizable visual patterns based on the most common objects found in ImageNet, such as dog's eyes, bird feathers, and so on. You can use random generation of the parameters in the layer_contributions dictionary to quickly explore many different layer combinations. Figure 8.6 shows a range of results obtained using different layer configurations from an image of a delicious homemade pastry. Section 8, Point 2, Point 2. Wrapping up. Deep Dream consists of running a ConvNet in reverse to generate inputs based on the representations learned by the network. The results produced are fun and somewhat similar to the visual artifacts induced in humans by the disruption of the visual cortex via psychedelics. Note that the process isn't specific to image models or even to ConvNets. It can be done for speech, music, and more. Section 8.3. Neural Style Transfer. In addition to Deep Dream, another major development in deep learning-driven image modification is neural style transfer, introduced by Leon Gatiss et al. In the summer of 2015. The neural style transfer algorithm has undergone many refinements and spawned many variations since its original introduction, and it has made its way into many smartphone photo apps. For simplicity, this section focuses on the formulation described in the original paper. Footnote. Leon A. Gatiss, Alexander S. Ecker, and Matthias Berisch, a neural algorithm of artistic style. See this URL. Neural style transfer consists of applying the style of a reference image to a target image while conserving the content of the target image. Figure 8.7 shows an example. In this context, style essentially means textures, colors, and visual patterns in the image at various spatial scales. And the content is the higher-level macro structure of the image. For instance, blue and yellow circular brushstrokes are considered to be the style in Figure 8.7, using Starry Night by Vincent van Gogh, and the buildings in the Tubingen photograph are considered to be the content. The idea of style transfer, which is tightly related to that of texture generation, has had a long history in the image processing community prior to the development of neural style transfer in 2015. But as it turns out, the deep learning-based implementation of style transfer offers results unparalleled by what had been previously achieved with classical computer vision techniques, and they triggered an amazing renaissance in creative applications of computer vision. The key notion behind implementing style transfer is the same idea that's central to all deep learning algorithms. You define a loss function to specify what you want to achieve, and you minimize this loss. You know what you want to achieve, conserving the content of the original image while adopting the style of the reference image. If we were able to mathematically define content and style, then an appropriate loss function to minimize would be the following. Here, distance is a norm function such as the L2 norm. Content is a function that takes an image and computes a representation of its content. And style is a function that takes an image and computes a representation of its style. Minimizing this loss causes style of generated underscore image to be close to style of reference underscore image, and content of generated underscore image to be close to content of original underscore image, thus achieving style transfer as we defined it. A fundamental observation made by Gatiss et al. Was that deep convolutional neural networks offer a way to mathematically define the style and content functions. Let's see how. Section 8.3.1. The content loss. As you already know, activations from earlier layers in a network contain local information about the image, whereas activations from higher layers contain increasingly global abstract information. Formulated in a different way, the activations of the different layers of a ConvNet provide a decomposition of the contents of an image over different spatial scales. Therefore, you'd expect the content of an image, which is more global and abstract, to be captured by the representations of the upper layers in a ConvNet. A good candidate for content loss is thus the L2 norm between the activations of an upper layer in a pre-trained ConvNet computed over the target image and the activations of the same layer computed over the generated image. This guarantees that, as seen from the upper layer, the generated image would look similar to the original target image. Assuming that what the upper layers of a ConvNet see is really the content of their input images, then this works as a way to preserve image content. Section 8.3.2. The style loss. The content loss only uses a single upper layer. But the style loss, as defined by Gatiss et al., uses multiple layers of a ConvNet. You try to capture the appearance of the style reference image at all spatial scales extracted by the ConvNet, not just a single scale. For the style loss, Gatiss et al. Use the gram matrix of a layer's activations, the inner product of the feature maps of a given layer. This inner product can be understood as representing a map of the correlations between the layer's features. These feature correlations capture the statistics of the patterns of a particular spatial scale, which empirically correspond to the appearance of the textures found at this scale. Hence, the style loss aims to preserve similar internal correlations within the activations of different layers, across the style reference image and the generated image. In turn, this guarantees that the textures found at different spatial scales look similar across the style reference image and the generated image. In short, you can use a pre-trained ConvNet to define a loss that will do the following. Preserve content by maintaining similar high-level layer activations between the target content image and the generated image. The ConvNet should see both the target image and the generated image as containing the same things. Preserve style by maintaining similar correlations within activations for both low-level layers and high-level layers. Feature correlations capture textures. The generated image and the style reference image should share the same textures at different spatial scales. Now, let's look at a Keras implementation of the original 2015 neural style transfer algorithm. As you'll see, it shares many similarities with the Deep Dream implementation developed in the previous section. Section 8.3.3. Neural style transfer in Keras. Neural style transfer can be implemented using any pre-trained ConvNet. Here, you'll use the VGG19 network, used by Gatiss et al. VGG19 is a simple variant of the VGG16 network introduced in Chapter 5, with three more convolutional layers. This is a general process. Set up a network that computes VGG19 layer activations for the style reference image, the target image, and the generated image at the same time. Use the layer activations computed over these three images to define the loss function described earlier, which you'll minimize in order to achieve style transfer. Set up a gradient descent process to minimize this loss function. Let's start by defining the paths to the style reference image and the target image. To make sure that the processed images are a similar size, widely different sizes make style transfer more difficult. You'll later resize them all to a shared height of 400 pixels. You need some auxiliary functions for loading, pre-processing and post-processing the images that go in and out of the VGG19 ConvNet. Let's set up the VGG19 network. It takes as input a batch of three images: the style reference image, the target image, and a placeholder that will contain the generated image. A placeholder is a symbolic tensor, the values of which are provided externally via NumPy arrays. The style reference and target image are static and thus defined using k.constant, whereas the values contained in the placeholder of the generated image will change over time. Let's define the content loss, which will make sure the top layer of the VGG19 ConvNet has a similar view of the target image and the generated image. Next is the style loss. It uses an auxiliary function to compute the gram matrix of an input matrix, a map of the correlations found in the original feature matrix. To these two loss components you add a third, the total variation loss, which operates on the pixels of the generated combination image. It encourages spatial continuity in the generated image, thus avoiding overly pixelated results. You can interpret it as a regularization loss. The loss that you minimize is a weighted average of these three losses. To compute the content loss, you use only one upper layer, the block5_conv2 layer, whereas for the style loss, you use a list of layers that spans both low-level and high-level layers. You add the total variation loss at the end. Depending on the style reference image and the content image you're using, you'll likely want to tune the content_weight coefficient, the contribution of the content loss to the total loss. A higher content_weight means the target content will be more recognizable in the generated image. Finally, you'll set up the gradient descent process. In the original Gattis et al. Paper, optimization is performed using the LBFGS algorithm. So that's what you'll use here. There is a key difference from the Deep Dream example in section 8.2. The LBFGS algorithm comes packaged with SciPy, but there are two slight limitations with the SciPy implementation. It requires that you pass the value of the loss function and the value of the gradients as two separate functions. It can only be applied to flat vectors, whereas you have a 3D image array. It would be inefficient to compute the value of the loss function and the value of the gradients independently, because doing so would lead to a lot of redundant computation between the two. The process would be almost twice as slow as computing them jointly. To bypass this, you'll set up a Python class named Evaluator that computes both the loss value and the gradients value at once, returns the loss value when called the first time, and caches the gradients for the next call. Finally, you can run the gradient descent process using SciPy's LBFGS algorithm, saving the current generated image at each iteration of the algorithm. Here, a single iteration represents 20 steps of gradient ascent. Figure 8.8 shows what you get. Keep in mind that what this technique achieves is merely a form of image retexturing or texture transfer. It works best with style reference images that are strongly textured and highly self-similar, and with content targets that don't require high levels of detail in order to be recognizable. It typically can't achieve fairly abstract feats such as transferring the style of one portrait to another. The algorithm is closer to classical signal processing than to AI, so don't expect it to work like magic. Additionally, note that running this style transfer algorithm is slow. But the transformation operated by the setup is simple enough that it can be learned by a small, fast feed-forward ConvNet as well, as long as you have appropriate training data available. Fast style transfer can thus be achieved by first spending a lot of compute cycles to generate input-output training examples for a fixed style reference image, using the method outlined here, and then training a simple ConvNet to learn this style-specific transformation. Once that's done, stylizing a given image is instantaneous. It's just a forward pass of this small ConvNet. Section 8.3.4. Wrapping up. Style transfer consists of creating a new image that preserves the contents of a target image while also capturing the style of a reference image. Content can be captured by the high-level activations of a ConvNet. Style can be captured by the internal correlations of the activations of different layers of a ConvNet. Hence, deep learning allows style transfer to be formulated as an optimization process using a loss defined with a pre-trained ConvNet. Starting from this basic idea, many variants and refinements are possible. Section 8.4. Generating images with variational autoencoders. Sampling from a latent space of images to create entirely new images, or edit existing ones, is currently the most popular and successful application of creative AI. In this section and the next, we'll review some high-level concepts pertaining to image generation, alongside implementation details relative to the two main techniques in this domain: variational autoencoders, VAEs, and generative adversarial networks, GANs. The techniques we present here aren't specific to images. You could develop latent spaces of sound, music, or even text using GANs and VAEs, but in practice, the most interesting results have been obtained with pictures, and that's what we focus on here. Section 8.4.1. Sampling from latent spaces of images. The key idea of image generation is to develop a low-dimensional latent space of representations, which naturally is a vector space, where any point can be mapped to a realistic-looking image. The module capable of realizing this mapping, taking as input a latent point and outputting an image, a grid of pixels, is called a generator in the case of GANs, or a decoder in the case of VAEs. Once such a latent space has been developed, you can sample points from it, either deliberately or at random, and, by mapping them to image space, generate images that have never been seen before. See figure 8.9. GANs and VAEs are two different strategies for learning such latent spaces of image representations, each with its own characteristics. VAEs are great for learning latent spaces that are well structured, where specific directions encode a meaningful axis of variation in the data. GANs generate images that can potentially be highly realistic, but the latent space they come from may not have as much structure and continuity. Section 8.4.2. Concept vectors for image editing. We already hinted at the idea of a concept vector when we covered word embeddings in Chapter 6. The idea is still the same. Given a latent space of representations, or an embedding space, certain directions in the space may encode interesting axes of variation in the original data. In a latent space of images of faces, for instance, there may be a smile vector, such that if latent point Z is the embedded representation of a certain face, then latent point Z plus S is the embedded representation of the same face, smiling. Once you've identified such a vector, it then becomes possible to edit images by projecting them into the latent space, moving their representation in a meaningful way, and then decoding them back to image space. There are concept vectors for essentially any independent dimension of variation in image space. In the case of faces, you may discover vectors for adding sunglasses to a face, removing glasses, turning a male face into a female face, and so on. Figure 8.11 is an example of a smile vector, a concept vector discovered by Tom White from the Victoria University School of Design in New Zealand, using VAEs trained on a dataset of faces of celebrities, the Celeb A dataset. Section 8.4.3. Variational autoencoders. Variational autoencoders, simultaneously discovered by Kingma and Welling in December 2013 and Rezende Mohamed and Wierstra in January 2014, are a kind of generative model that's especially appropriate for the task of image editing via concept vectors. They're a modern take on autoencoders, a type of network that aims to encode an input to a low-dimensional latent space and then decode it back, that mixes ideas from deep learning with Bayesian inference. Footnote: Diederik P. Kingmer and Max Welling, Autoencoding Variational Bayes. See this URL. Footnote: Danilo Jimenez Resende, Shakir Mohamed, and Dan Wiestra, Stochastic Backpropagation and Approximate Inference in Deep Generative Models. See this URL. A classical image autoencoder takes an image, maps it to a latent vector space via an encoder module, and then decodes it back to an output with the same dimensions as the original image via a decoder module. See figure 8.12. It's then trained by using as target data the same images as the input images, meaning the autoencoder learns to reconstruct the original inputs. By imposing various constraints on the code, the output of the encoder, you can get the autoencoder to learn more or less interesting latent representations of the data. Most commonly, you'll constrain the code to be low-dimensional and sparse, mostly zeros, in which case the encoder acts as a way to compress the input data into fewer bits of information. In practice, such classical autoencoders don't lead to particularly useful or nicely structured latent spaces. They're not much good at compression either. For these reasons, they have largely fallen out of fashion. VAEs, however, augment autoencoders with a little bit of statistical magic that forces them to learn continuous, highly structured latent spaces. They have turned out to be a powerful tool for image generation. A VAE, instead of compressing its input image into fixed code in the latent space, turns the image into the parameters of a statistical distribution, a mean and a variance. Essentially, this means you're assuming the input image has been generated by a statistical process, and that the randomness of this process should be taken into account during encoding and decoding. The VAE then uses the mean and variance parameters to randomly sample one element of the distribution and decodes that element back to the original input. See figure 8.13. The stochasticity of this process improves robustness and forces the latent space to encode meaningful representations everywhere. Every point sampled in the latent space is decoded to a valid output. In technical terms, here's how a VAE works. An encoder module turns the input sample's input underscore image into two parameters in a latent space of representations, z underscore mean and z underscore log underscore variance. You randomly sample a point z from the latent normal distribution that's assumed to generate the input image via this, where epsilon is a random tensor of small values. A decoder module maps this point in the latent space back to the original input image. Because epsilon is random, the process ensures that every point that's close to the latent location where you encoded input underscore image of z hyphen mean can be decoded to something similar to input underscore image, thus forcing the latent space to be continuously meaningful. Any two close points in the latent space will decode to highly similar images. Continuity, combined with the low dimensionality of the latent space, forces every direction in the latent space to encode a meaningful axis of variation of the data, making the latent space very structured and thus highly suitable to manipulation via concept vectors. The parameters of a VAE are trained via two loss functions: a reconstruction loss that forces the decoded samples to match the initial inputs, and a regularization loss that helps learn well-formed latent spaces and reduce overfitting to the training data. Let's quickly go over a Keras implementation of a VAE. Schematically, it looks like this. You can then train the model using the reconstruction loss and the regularization loss. The following listing shows the encoder network you'll use. Mapping images to the parameters of a probability distribution over the latent space. It's a simple convnet that maps the input image x to two vectors, z underscore mean and z underscore log underscore var. Next is the code for using z underscore mean and z underscore log underscore var, the parameters of the statistical distribution assumed to have produced input underscore image, to generate a latent space point z. Here, you wrap some arbitrary code, built on top of Keras backend primitives, into a lambda layer. In Keras, everything needs to be a layer. So code that isn't part of a built-in layer should be wrapped in a lambda, or in a custom layer. The following listing shows the decoder implementation. You reshape the vector z to the dimensions of an image, and then use a few convolution layers to obtain a final image output that has the same dimension as the original input underscore img. The dual loss of a VAE doesn't fit the traditional expectation of a sample-wise function of the form loss of input and target. Thus, you'll set up the loss by writing a custom layer that internally uses the built-in add underscore loss layer method to create an arbitrary loss. Finally, you're ready to instantiate and train the model. Because the loss is taken care of in the custom layer, you don't specify an external loss at compile time. Loss equals none. Which in turn means you won't pass target data during training. As you can see, you only pass x underscore train to the model in fit. Once such a model is trained, on MNIST in this case, you can use the decoder network to turn arbitrary latent space vectors into images. The grid of sampled digits, see figure 8.14, shows a completely continuous distribution of the different digit classes, with one digit morphing into another as you follow a path through latent space. Specific directions in this space have a meaning. For example, there's a direction for fourness, oneness, and so on. In the next section, we'll cover in detail the other major tool for generating artificial images, Generative Adversarial Networks, GANs. Section 8.4.4. Wrapping up. Image generation with deep learning is done by learning latent spaces that capture statistical information about a data set of images. By sampling and decoding points from the latent space, you can generate never-before-seen images. There are two major tools to do this, VAEs and GANs. VAEs result in highly structured continuous latent representations. For this reason, they work well for doing all sorts of image editing in latent space. Face swapping, turning a frowning face into a smiling face, and so on. They also work nicely for doing latent space-based animations, such as animating a walk along a cross-section of the latent space, showing a starting image slowly morphing into different images in a continuous way. GANs enable the generation of realistic single-frame images, but may not induce latent spaces with solid structure and high continuity. Most successful practical applications I've seen with images rely on VAEs, but GANs are extremely popular in the world of academic research, at least circa 2016 to 2017. You'll find out how they work and how to implement one in the next section. Tip: to play further with image generation, I suggest working with the large-scale Celeb Faces attributes, Celeb A, dataset. It's a free-to-download image dataset containing more than 200,000 celebrity portraits. It's great for experimenting with concept vectors in particular. Definitely beats MNIST. Section 8.5. Introduction to Generative Adversarial Networks. Generative Adversarial Networks, GANs, introduced in 2014 by Goodfeather et al., are an alternative to VAEs for learning latent spaces of images. They enable the generation of fairly realistic synthetic images by forcing the generated images to be statistically almost indistinguishable from real ones. Footnote: Ian Goodfellow et al., Generative Adversarial Networks, at this URL. An intuitive way to understand GANs is to imagine a forger trying to create a fake Picasso painting. At first, the forger is pretty bad at the task. He mixes some of his fakes with authentic Picassos and shows them all to an art dealer. The art dealer makes an authenticity assessment for each painting and gives the forger feedback about what makes a Picasso look like a Picasso. The forger goes back to his studio to prepare some new fakes. As time goes on, the forger becomes increasingly competent at imitating the style of Picasso, and the art dealer becomes increasingly expert at spotting fakes. In the end, they have on their hands some excellent fake Picassos. That's what a GAN is. A forger network and an expert network, each being trained to best the other. As such, a GAN is made of two parts. Generator network takes as input a random vector, a random point in the latent space, and decodes it into a synthetic image. Discriminator network, or adversary, takes as input an image, real or synthetic, and predicts whether the image came from the training set or was created by the generator network. The generator network is trained to be able to fool the discriminator network, and thus it evolves towards generating increasingly realistic images as training goes on. Artificial images that look indistinguishable from real ones, to the extent that it's impossible for the discriminator network to tell the two apart. See figure 8.15. Meanwhile, the discriminator is constantly adapting to the gradually improving capabilities of the generator, setting a high bar of realism for the generated images. Once training is over, the generator is capable of turning any point in its input space into a believable image. Unlike VAEs, this latent space has fewer explicit guarantees of meaningful structure. In particular, it isn't continuous. Remarkably, a GAN is a system where the optimization minimum isn't fixed, unlike in any other training setup you've encountered in this book. Normally, gradient descent consists of rolling down hills in a static loss landscape. But with a GAN, every step taken down the hill changes the entire landscape a little. It's a dynamic system, where the optimization process is not seeking a minimum, but an equilibrium between two forces. For this reason, GANs are notoriously difficult to train. Getting a GAN to work requires lots of careful tuning of the model architecture and training parameters. Section 8.5.1. A schematic GAN implementation. In this section, we'll explain how to implement a GAN in Keras, in its barest form, because GANs are advanced. Diving deeply into the technical details would be out of scope for this book. The specific implementation is a deep convolutional GAN, DC-GAN. A GAN where the generator and discriminator are deep convnets. In particular, it uses a conv2D transpose layer for image upsampling in the generator. You'll train the GAN on images from CIF-AR10, a dataset of 50,000 32x32 RGB images belonging to 10 classes, 5,000 images per class. To make things easier, you'll only use images belonging to the class Frog. Schematically, the GAN looks like this. A generator network maps vectors of shape latent underscore dim to images of shape 32x32x3. A discriminator network maps images of shape 32x32x3 to a binary score estimating the probability that the image is real. A GAN network chains the generator and the discriminator together. GAN of X equals discriminator of generator of X. Thus, this GAN network maps latent space vectors to the discriminator's assessment of the realism of these latent vectors as decoded by the generator. You train the discriminator using examples of real and fake images along with real or fake labels, just as you train any regular image classification model. To train the generator, you use the gradients of the generator's weights with regard to the loss of the GAN model. This means, at every step, you move the weights of the generator in a direction that makes the discriminator more likely to classify as real the images decoded by the generator. In other words, you train the generator to fool the discriminator. Section 8.5.2. A bag of tricks. The process of training GANs and tuning GAN implementations is notoriously difficult. There are a number of known tricks you should keep in mind. Like most things in deep learning, it's more alchemy than science. These tricks are heuristics, not theory-backed guidelines. They're supported by a level of intuitive understanding of the phenomena at hand, and they're known to work well empirically, although not necessarily in every context. Here are a few of the tricks used in the implementation of the GAN generator and discriminator in this section. It isn't an exhaustive list of GAN-related tips. You'll find many more across the GAN literature. We use TANCH as a last activation in the generator instead of sigmoid, which is more commonly found in other types of models. We sample points from the latent space using a normal distribution, Gaussian distribution, not a uniform distribution. Stochasticity is good to induce robustness. Because GAN training results in a dynamic equilibrium, GANs are likely to get stuck in all sorts of ways. Introducing randomness during training helps prevent this. We introduce randomness in two ways: by using dropout in the discriminator, and by adding random noise to the labels for the discriminator. Sparse gradients can hinder GAN training. In deep learning, sparsity is often a desirable property, but not in GANs. Two things can induce gradient sparsity: max pooling operations and ReLU activations. Instead of max pooling, we recommend using strided convolutions for downsampling, and we recommend using a leaky ReLU layer instead of ReLU activation. It's similar to ReLU, but it relaxes sparsity constraints by allowing small negative activation values. In generated images, it's common to see checkerboard artifacts, caused by unequal coverage of the pixel space in the generator. See figure 8.17. To fix this, we use a kernel size that's divisible by the stride size whenever we use strided conv2d transpose, or conv2d, in both the generator and the discriminator. Section 8.5.3. The generator. First, let's develop a generator model that turns a vector from the latent space — during training it will be sampled at random — into a candidate image. One of the many issues that commonly arise with GANs is that the generator gets stuck with generated images that look like noise. A possible solution is to use dropout on both the discriminator and the generator. Section 8.5.4. The discriminator. Next, you'll develop a discriminator model that takes as input a candidate image, real or synthetic, and classifies it into one of two classes: generated image or real image that comes from the training set. Section 8.5.5. The adversarial network. Finally, you set up the GAN, which chains the generator and the discriminator. When trained, this model will move the generator in a direction that improves its ability to fool the discriminator. This model turns latent space points into a classification decision, fake or real, and it's meant to be trained with labels that are always, "these are real images." So, training GAN will update the weights of generator in a way that makes discriminator more likely to predict real when looking at fake images. It's very important to note that you set the discriminator to be frozen during training, non-trainable. Its weights won't be updated when training GAN. If the discriminator weights could be updated during this process, then you'd be training the discriminator to always predict real, which isn't what you want. Section 8.5.6. How to train your DC GAN. Now you can begin training. To recapitulate, this is what the training loop looks like schematically. For each epoch, you do the following. draw random points in the latent space, random noise. Generate images with generator using this random noise. Mix the generated images with real ones. Train discriminator using these mixed images with corresponding targets, either real for the real images or fake for the generated images. Draw new random points in the latent space. Train GAN using these random vectors with targets that all say these are real images. This updates the weights of the generator, only because the discriminator is frozen inside GAN. To move them towards getting the discriminator to predict these are real images for generated images. This trains the generator to fool the discriminator. Let's implement it. When training, you may see the adversarial loss begin to increase considerably, while the discriminative loss tends to zero. The discriminator may end up dominating the generator. If that's the case, try reducing the discriminator learning rate and increase the dropout rate of the discriminator. Section 8.5.7. Wrapping up.